everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and the Eagles are now 5-1 as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 115. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to discuss our thoughts on the Eagles' huge win last Thursday night in prime time against the Carolina Panthers. That game had a playoff vibe to it for sure, and Greg and I have a lot to say after reviewing the tape from both sides of the ball. We will also jump right ahead into this week's huge matchup against the Washington Redskins and everything that they present on both sides of the football before we get into scouting report, where I'll break down a player that could be in for an increased role this Monday night due to an injury for the Redskins. But before we get into all that, let's not waste any more time. I was joined by Greg Cosell earlier tonight to talk about the big win over Carolina and the upcoming battle with the Redskins. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
That's right. We're back. Another edition here of Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I'm Fran Duffy, joined by Greg Cosell. Of course, you guys already know that. Greg, it's been a long break since Thursday Night Football.
Well, not for me.
Not for you, but for Eagles fans,
right, it's been a long break.
It feels like forever since the game. It was an outstanding game. I said earlier, it felt like playoff football, that game. It had a playoff feel to it just because of how physical on both sides.
Gritty.
It was a really, really fun game to watch.
More grit than glitter, Fran. More spit than polish, as they say.
As
John Facenda used to say.
The golden voice.
That's right. That's right.
Going back and watching the film, I'm sure you did early on this weekend, obviously.
I did.
With the game being Thursday night. Initial impressions, I guess going back to the big thing with Carson Wentz, and we'll start there on offense, and that's really the topic we start with every week. Outstanding on third down once again, but overall, what were your thoughts of Carson? Go back watching the film.
You know, it's funny. You talked about the playoff atmosphere and the physical and emotional intensity of that game, and I thought that given that, I thought Wentz played well. He was not as sharp throwing the football as he'd been over the last two or three weeks prior.
I would agree.
Particularly early in the game, he missed some throws. But I thought that as the game progressed, he settled a bit into the game. And that, to me, really shows his mental toughness, his ability to put bad throws behind him and play to the moment. Because that game was, as you said, there was a physical intensity that you could feel watching it on TV for sure. And I'm sure the emotional intensity was just as strong. And when all was said and done, you know, I used the word before, but it was a gritty performance by Wentz. Not his best performance in terms of, you know, the traits and the way he threw it, but a very gritty performance on the road against a very good defense.
Yeah, I mean, you saw him stand in the pocket and take hit after hit.
I love that.
Some of the plays that he made also just sliding in the pocket. You saw the one on a third down conversion where he almost looks like he's sprinting to his right, but it was not sprinting like a guy that the universal sign of not knowing what he's doing. It was sprinting with a purpose.
Right.
He ran to his right for 3 yards, found that open throwing lane, and hits the receiver for a first down. And then the play late in the game, a huge third down conversion.
To Hollins.
Third and long to Mac Hollins. It was just outstanding.
I think that was third and 16, was it?
It was third and 16. And what I thought was really cool about that play was earlier in the game, the Eagles gave, I think it was the second sack that they gave up, was off a chip protection where the only person accounting for the edge defender coming off the edge, off the right side, was one chipper, and it was the tight end. He chips and releases, and there was no one there to pick him up. LeGarrette Blount had his focus in the middle of the field, and no one was there to take off the edge defender. He ends up getting a hit on Carson Wentz. It was a sack. On that play, it was the same exact protection. I want to say it was Zach Ertz was releasing late there. He chips off the edge defender. Carson sees that guy coming, subtly steps up in the pocket, and hits Mac Hollins for a first down. I thought that was just outstanding.
Big time. And he's really shown the ability. Even that one was a little more defined and clear, the movement, but he's shown some real subtle movement as well, where he literally just takes a step to the left. And that might seem like nothing when you're watching the game, but it really means something, and it becomes very noticeable when you watch tape. Just a small step navigating within the pocket just to find that spot that's a little more quiet and a little more comfortable to deliver the football.
What did you think overall of the pressure that Carolina bought? Was it something that you had seen, and did they do anything different? I mean, it was definitely higher volume.
I was surprised by that.
I know you watch them every week.
I was surprised by their blitz frequency. It wasn't so much the nature of the pressures, but I think that their new coordinator, Steve Wilks, who's replaced Sean McDermott, I think he's putting his stamp on this defense a little bit. And now after that game, I believe Carolina is second or third in the league in terms of blitz percentage. But no, I was surprised watching the game at their blitz frequency. I did not expect that.
Do you think that was more because of Vitae? Was it the nature of the game? Like, you know, it's not like everything was targeting Vitae. There were a few different
The majority of their pressure, again, you don't know if they do it because it's Vitae,
right,
but the majority of their pressures attack the right side of the Eagles' formation. So it could be Vitae. It could be the fact that they wanted someone to help.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you pressure because you want a back to stay in, or you want a tight end to stay in. And if both have to stay in, then you're reducing the number of eligible receivers by two, and then the defense has an advantage right away because now there's only three primary receivers as opposed to potentially five. So blitzing and pressure schemes are not always about sacking the quarterback. Sometimes they're about limiting the options in the pass game.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that really the production wasn't necessarily there for Zach Ertz in the first half. And you could say, well, he was kept in the chip a good amount.
At one point, he had two catches and both were touchdowns, but he only had two catches.
Right, exactly right. And I think that was that's actually a theme we can get to a little bit later
in
the show for a different reason. I thought that was really interesting just to see how they handled some different things. Carolina did a lot in terms of sometimes it was a linebacker in the B gap.
Yep.
Sometimes it was guys off the edge. Sometimes they mixed some things up on the inside. We saw the split mug front. We saw the 5-on-5. We saw a lot of different looks from
that
team. And I thought they challenged not just Carson Wentz, but the entire Eagles offensive front.
And they obviously felt that that was more important than coverage because obviously they're not a high percentage man team. They were playing with Colin Jones at safety in their base. Obviously on third down, they brought in Jarris Byrd, who's a more athletic free safety type. But they obviously felt it was more important to pressure. And you're not just pressuring Carson Wentz.
Right.
You're pressuring the pass game, the protection. They obviously felt it was more important to do that than to sit back in coverage.
Yeah, and then you look at the run game. LeGarrette Blount ran hard once
again. He sure did.
The Eagles' double teams in the inside zone game were outstanding again in this game. I mean, there were a couple negative runs there for Blount where there was a free runner. But, I mean, I drew up some shots today, you know, with the help of Ben Fennell here at NovaCare, where you could see the movement, you know, that Jason Peters and Stefan Wisniewski and then Jason Kelsey and Brandon Brooks were able to generate on
the inside. A couple of times they moved short. And he's a good player, but they really moved him.
Yeah.
And then when you do that, you drop him in the lap of the linebacker, and then the linebacker can't make a play either.
No question.
And, of course, we saw the Wham game.
Saw that a few times.
That a few times. It was effective again.
Yeah, and the beauty of that, of course, is to get LeGarrette Blount moving downhill immediately. You create that instant crease for him
and
to just kind of hit it up inside.
The second part of that is it gets the O-lineman right up to the second level.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we definitely saw that once again. Greg, when you watch this team, and they're number one third down, and that's really been one of the big stories, what is that? I mean, it's not like they completely revamped everything they did schematically from a year ago. You're not seeing a whole lot more in terms of rub routes and different isolation routes to try and get guys open. To me, they're running similar schemes. I just think across the board you're seeing a higher level of execution, and a lot of that goes to Carson Wentz as well.
I would agree with that because on third down in particular, true on any down, but on third down in particular, you must eliminate what's not there and isolate what is there very quickly. And I think Carson Wentz is better at that now than he was a year ago. As we've said, he's thrown the ball overall far more accurately this year. And they've spread out the third down numbers. We did a breakdown at NFL Films today preparing for the matchup show this week because obviously Washington-Philly will be one of our marquee games. It might even be our big board game.
Spoiler alert.
There you go. you know, I think Ertz has, 11 third down catches. I think Jeffrey, has 10 or 9. Aguilar, has 8. I mean, it's been spread out pretty evenly. Torrey Smith, only has 4 or 5, but obviously one of them was the long touchdown a few weeks ago against Arizona. So it's really been spread out among three players pretty evenly.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at, you know, Zach Ertz, who's been such a big part of this offense, obviously is a leading receiver in terms of the tight end position around the NFL. He's been outstanding on third down. You just mentioned 6 of 8, 4 touchdowns for Zach Ertz on third down. Down in the red zone, 11 catches off 16 targets.
Yeah,
3 touchdowns. Yeah, overall.
Yes, overall.
I mean, he's been outstanding, leads the NFL in terms of targets, receptions, touchdowns, first down catches for the tight end position. And the Eagles just doing a great job of stringing long drives together.
You know, the other thing that I think we have to point out about Carson Wentz on third down, and this is so critical, is the one thing we've seen him do much better this year, which is just his growth and development as a young quarterback, is come off a first read and go to a second read. Because I can see in my mind certain plays this year, and I can't remember the specific opponents for these plays, where he looked left and then came back right and maybe hit Ertz in the middle of the field. You know, and when it's third
and
nine.
The second Ertz touchdown. Wasn't third down, but just the play where he's looking over to his left.
Yep.
He had that high-low concept to his left,
yes.
And he works back to Ertz, and it was outstanding.
Yes, yes. But even just in general, you know, where – because don't forget, sometimes third down conversions are not highlight plays.
Yeah.
If it's third and eight and you get 9 yards, you know what? You move the chains, and that's a big play in a game.
You know what the other thing, too, with him watching over the course of this early part of the season – some of his best throws are the ones he doesn't make, and we've highlighted some of that on the column and on Twitter. But the one thing that we didn't mention with that the third down conversion of Mac Hollins was that Nelson Agholor read blitz immediately. He knew that his man was coming, and he cut his route off. He was the hot receiver, and Carson looked at him, but it was third and eight, a critical point in the game. And he knew that, you know, this is what the defense wants. The defense wants me to throw this 3 yard pass,
and then
Nelson
he'll get
Agholor,
tackled, and we'll punt,
and we'll punt. And he held on to the ball, and he's like, you know what, Mac Hollins is going to uncover for me. He steps in the pocket, delivers that ball.
Well, that's the thing about Wentz. He has a very interesting balance, and sometimes he crosses the line.
Sure.
But he has a very interesting balance of aggression versus, what would be the right word, you know, smart, so to speak. You know, every once in a while, you'd like to see him either get rid of the ball or, throw it away or maybe slide. That's just, I guess, not in his DNA.
When he lowered his shoulder into safety. Listen, me personally, I'll take it, man. I love the.
Well, I thought Romo said was right. He said, you love that, but it's kind of silly. and both of those things are true.
Right, exactly right. So moving on to the defensive side, this defense, it just has a different feel when number 91
is on the
team. I know
what stood
out to me. I mean, when 91's on the field, he's the defense is a different level.
And here's what was fascinating to me watching the tape. The Carolina Panthers have a right guard who's an all-pro who they paid a lot of money to. And
it's one of the meanest offensive linemen in football.
And they put the burden on him because they slid away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And they let him block Fletcher Cox one-on-one. In this particular game, it did not work out very well for Carolina.
No, it did
because
not.
Because we remember the play where he caused the interception, but there were numerous other plays where he just one-on-one beat Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And Trey Turner is a good football player now.
No.
But Carolina, you know, normally we see teams slide toward Fletcher Cox. They very often slid away from Fletcher Cox, and they said, hey, we're going to let our all-pro guard block him.
And I think a lot of that, too, and we've seen a lot of that this year when Fletcher's been on the field, is what Jim Schwartz and that defensive staff has done to really kind of force a defense's hand. You know, because on that interception – the Eagles lined up in one of their nickel sub packages where it was three defensive ends on the field. You had Chris Long to one side next to Cox, and on the other side, you had Brandon Graham and Derek Barnett.
Right.
And the offense chose to slide the protection towards that 2DN side because
correct.
You know, they can run a lot of different things off
right,
of that.
Right.
But then also, you had Jordan Hicks lined up directly over the center, just more candy. More eye candy to take away from Fletcher.
He kind of just showed up and then backed out. But you can't. You have to
account for
him. You have to account for him. You can't say, nah, he's not going to come. And then if he does come, you're in trouble.
I love everything that they've done this year because it's definitely it's got a different feel to it, especially when Cox is in the game. But it's got a different feel to it in terms of all the different things they're doing from a front standpoint.
Right, right. No, they really are. Because from a coverage standpoint, I wouldn't really say they're doing anything that elaborate.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
But and even up front. You know, there's the occasional stunt. There, you know, they blitz on occasion. This past week against Carolina, the majority of their blitzes I thought were zero blitzes. Other than that, they didn't blitz very much. And they've been effective with those zero blitzes this year. But even going back to the Redskin game week one when they got Cousins to play fast and actually miss a routine throw that turned into a Jalen Mills interception.
Yeah, it was cover zero.
Yeah. But So they're not high percentage blitz, and they don't play a lot of exotic coverages or hybrid coverages, but it's up front where they're really, really good.
You made a good point that I actually never thought about. They're not running as many stunts this year.
No,
you
not
as
many.
As much.
No, just once in a while.
Yeah, that's I never thought about that. You don't want to say a wholesale change of philosophy, but just a lot different looking back to last year where, you know, the fronts were maybe more basic, but
right.
You saw a little bit more in terms of movement after the snap. This year, it's just a lot more in terms of moving personnel around and trying to mess with an offensive protection scheme before the snap of the football. Tim Jernigan, outstanding again,
yep.
I thought. And
I thought Vinnie Curry played well.
Vinnie Curry had one of the, I thought that Derek Barnett, it wasn't like he had an outstanding
right.
game, and the half sack that he got wasn't a great rush. But I thought it was his best game in the regular season. To me, like he strung together more consistent, more effective rushes.
He's
more
feeling
hurries,
his way.
More hits.
I think he's getting better.
Using his hands, I think, has been the issue.
Yeah.
You know, there have been times where you could see he's not using his hands to try and beat those tackles off the edge. And you know, in the NFL, you're not going to get away with that on a consistent.
No,
basis.
Because he's not dynamically explosive. He's not a bend. I mean, he can bend, but he's not one of those great benders. So you're right. Hand usage for him is critical.
Yeah, and so watching him, I thought that I'm trying to remember the exact play. There was a huge hit that he delivered. It was one of his best rushes of the year. I want to say there was a penalty called on the play. But Derek Barnett, I thought, had his best game. And just across the front, all those guys. Vinnie Curry, like you said, was outstanding against the run. I mean, this team was outside of a couple breakdowns in the quarterback run game from the option standpoint with Cam.
But the conventional runs were –
forget about it.
Had no chance.
None. Yeah, they completely
shut dominated.
Down.
They dominated.
Inside, outside.
Yeah.
One back, two back.
Yeah.
Didn't matter in this
no.
game.
No.
Yeah, and that's when you can make an offense one dimensional, especially when it's Cam Newton, and you make them one dimensional. I think that really can play in your favor, and it worked for them on Thursday.
And I want to give you a player that I think's been a little overlooked and unsung, maybe not in the building here, but just talking about the Eagles' defense. I think Patrick Robinson fits that category.
I agree.
Patrick Robinson has played the slot. He's now playing outside a lot more, and we rarely ever talk about Patrick Robinson getting beat.
Yeah.
I mean, he's played well.
And it was a rough summer for him.
Yeah.
In training camp.
We thought he might not make the team at one point. I remember being down here at training camp talking to you, and we were wondering if he'd make the team.
It seemed like the Eagles receivers were like lining up, running into line to take turns
right.
going up against Patrick Robinson.
Yeah.
And he's been outstanding all fall. I mean, it's been really fun to watch. And Nigel Bradham, I thought, might have had his best
game
as an Eagle.
He played really, really well.
And
I
thought he got off to kind of a slow start this year. The last two, three weeks, he's been outstanding.
Really good football this
run
week.
Game and pass game.
Yeah.
Inside, outside.
He looks
really
to me like I'm surprised to say this, but he looks like a more explosive athlete than he did a year ago.
I mean, when they ran that jet action and they ran the crack toss the other way and he shot his gun, and he got downfield immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, that was great closing speed from the backside.
No,
it was outstanding.
He's played well.
Yeah, Nigel Bradham's been outstanding. It's been a really fun defense to watch, and hopefully with reinforcements coming soon in the secondary, I think everybody's really excited about what this defense can be moving forward. But let's move now to the Washington Redskins, a team that the Eagles were able to beat in week one, but it really have been a tough out for this Eagles team over the last few years. A different kind of profile from what we've seen over the last couple of years.
A little undefined.
Yeah, and that's what going back and watching them, you know, they don't have a very distinct rhythm. They don't get – I remember watching them the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You watch and you're like, man, they're putting play after play after play together. It's really just got a feel, a rhythm, and you're not really seeing that right now. But they're still putting up numbers. They're still producing, not just in the win column, but overall their offensive numbers are still pretty good.
And it's funny you say that because I think that's hard for people to sort of visualize when you say that their offense is lacking rhythm. But I know exactly what you mean because I see the same thing. They're not running the ball very well. That's an issue. And they were able to run the ball much better last year. I don't know what Rob Kelly's status is for the game Monday night. But clearly they're not set on Samaje Perine as their back because Chris Thompson was essentially their back this week, and he played in base personnel packages. The pass game, I don't get a feel. You don't really get a feel that Pryor is a big factor. Doxson is not necessarily a big factor. You just don't feel that there's – like last year, you kind of knew what you were going to get on a weekly basis. You don't really feel that watching them right now.
So watching them, you know, I'm saying all the same things. And I turn to Ben Fennell, and I go, where do they rank right now? Because he's outstanding with pool numbers.
Right, right.
So where do they rank right now in terms of explosive plays? Turns out an explosive play, 20-plus yards, they're tied for 13th I'm like, wow, that's kind of surprising. I wouldn't have expected that.
You would have thought they would have been lower?
I would have thought they would have been lower because they're not the same downfield team that we've seen in the past. You know, all those downfield
Vernon
shot
Davis
plays.
Has had some, though.
He's had a couple.
Yeah.
But you know what? So many of the – this doesn't account for yards after catch. And this team right now, their offense is more based on yards after catch than any team in the NFL. Through the first 5 weeks, I don't have the numbers yet from yesterday's game against San Francisco, but 55% of their total yards come after the catch in the passing game.
I don't think it'll go down because Thompson had a number of plays yesterday. Vernon Davis had that seam ball and that he then ran for another, 35 yards?
Yep.
So I don't think that number will go down. It may go up.
And the Eagles are one of the worst teams right now in the NFL. They've given up some long yards after catch. You think of some of these plays we've seen against the Chargers and then also from earlier in the year. They've given up some long catch and runs. Sterling Shepard was another one. This is going to be one of those big games within a game. You know, Chris Thompson has been dynamic. He's been the focal point of this offense, running the ball, catching the ball. He's been everything for them. You've got to corral him, and he's been a thorn in the side of the Eagles' defense over the last couple of years.
And with him, their screen game is phenomenal.
Yeah, and that O-line.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Brandon Scherff. Wow.
I'll post some of the shots later this week. I mean, it's outrageous.
Well, one of the things that they've been really good at, which we have not seen much this year, and maybe it was a Pierre Garçon thing, and maybe they're hoping Josh Doctson can become that guy, is the backside dig.
Yeah.
And that has almost been missing from their arsenal this year. I mean, maybe there's been one or two, but I don't remember seeing very many, do you?
No, that's one of the things we talked about coming into the year was, you know, you lose not just the vertical element, but DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon are pretty precise route runners. And Doctson, was a question with him coming out of TCU as a rookie. And Pryor's not known as a very defined, precise route runner either.
And I think they're hoping Doctson can become that guy who can run those dig routes, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that certainly has been something that is going to be interesting to watch. And as you mentioned, Vernon Davis in the vertical passing game, Jordan Reed is a threat at every level of the field. But they like to get these tight ends involved. One of the things, though, they play a lot of heavy tight end sets, and they're a big 12, 13 personnel team. The tight ends have kind of hurt them in the run game this year, more so than in other years that I've noticed. You know, and I haven't charted it or anything, but it seems that a lot of their runs that, you know, were one block away were because a tight end missed the block. And that was just something that a year ago, that wasn't the case.
Right.
So that's been interesting to watch with them as well. But this O-line, I mean, Trent Williams, he's banged up. He's not 100% playing against San Francisco, but he's outstanding. And Brandon Scherff, you mentioned, had a rough the summer. He didn't look great. He wasn't great.
He didn't look great in the preseason. Yeah. I didn't think.
And then even week one, I thought that the Eagles got the better of him, but he's an outstanding player. And Spencer Long is healthy now. So they've got a very talented offensive line. And then you go to the defensive side. The numbers are again here are pretty good, but you don't look at them and say, man, like they're really dynamic in this one instance. That being said, they've got 16 sacks this year, which is good for, I want to say they're top 10 in the league in terms of their sack numbers. But then also in the last three outings against the Eagles, so at the beginning of last year, 13 sacks in three games. So
now, I know Jonathan Allen will be out.
Yeah, and that'll be an issue for them. Preston Smith has been very good this year.
He's been very good.
He's turned into a nice player.
And Kerrigan is always solid.
Yes.
And our Temple guy.
Matt Ioannidis.
Yeah, he plays in their sub packages.
Guy's relentless.
I know.
The game against the Rams, I think it was week two. I think it was the week after they played us. He made like the first like four out of the first five plays, and they were like three outside the numbers.
Now, he gets a lot of snaps. He plays in the nickel.
Yes,
he's an inside pass rusher in the nickel. So you know they're predominantly a nickel defense.
Yep.
I would say that they're more single high than two shell. They play a lot of cover one on third down. When you get them in the red zone, they then tend to play a lot of two shell, a lot of red zone cover two. Yep. But in the field, they're a little more single high. So I mean, you know how to attack them.
Yep, and when they go single high, it seems that the rookie Monte Nicholson, who I didn't study coming out,
I did.
I knew of him and I saw him in person at the combine.
He's a little bit of an athletic freak.
He's impressive. That pick he had a couple weeks ago was really impressive.
He's a little bit of an athletic freak with his size and speed.
And he had a pass breakup yesterday. I thought it was really, really good, too. And then they have DJ Swearinger who rolls down.
Who's essentially a box player. It'll be interesting to see when they do play man, and they're not a pure man team, but obviously everybody plays man, what they do. I mean, normally he's the tight end matchup. Every once in a while there's a linebacker, depending on what the coverage is. But Swearinger's normally the tight end matchup. If the Eagles felt going into the Cardinals game that they could match up Ertz on Branch and feel good about it, they're going to feel pretty good about the Ertz-DJ Swearinger matchup, don't you think?
I would agree. I would agree. And then they've done such a good job, the Eagles, of creating those isolated matchups for him down in the red zone. We saw it against Branch in Arizona. We saw it last week on his first touchdown. It was basically the same concept.
That was a corner, too, that he was matched against.
And it was basically the same concept. Yep. Slightly different formation, different side of the field, but basically the same concept. Wouldn't surprise me at all if we saw something similar. So, I would agree. I think that would be a matchup that they would feel pretty good about. But this pressure scheme, for sure, they try and do a lot of different things, especially trying to get try and put running backs in stress, in protection. Yeah. And that's one of the big things that they do.
And I think that's, ideally critical when you're playing the Eagles. I mean, it was very critical when Sproles was there. Do we know about Smallwood yet for this week?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. So not as of Monday night.
Because clearly if he plays, he can be a very, very good receiver. So to play off your point, you'd want to try to keep him in the backfield as a pass protector. Sometimes that's the reason you blitz. It's not necessarily, obviously if you sack the quarterback, that's great.
Yep.
But sometimes the objective in blitzing is to force the offense to have to keep the running back in to pass protect.
Yeah, and that's actually what I meant to get to that point earlier with Thompson. Thompson is a great pass protector.
He is.
But you're probably better off trying to blitz to keep him in.
Right.
He is trying to get him out in space, and that's something that he's absolutely able to do. But you're probably better off doing that. So it's going to be a fun matchup. Prime time, Monday Night Football.
Division game.
It's
a division game. The Eagles are playing well, yes, and they're playing at a high level overall as a team, but division games have a funny way of playing out.
If this weekend in the NFL has told you nothing, it's that anything can happen in this league on any given Sunday or Monday. So we'll see. All right, Greg Cosell, appreciate the time here as always on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Grant.
Great stuff from Greg, and you can follow him just like I do on Twitter at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That is one way to support the show, but the other is to go onto Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and give us a rating or even leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout out to Rich Bobby, who went and gave us a great shout out on Twitter telling everybody to listen to the show. So thanks again to Rich and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. We talked earlier about this Redskins defense, and we didn't talk too much about the secondary where, we know Josh Norman, he's coming off the rib injury. He's up in the air for Monday night. Bashaud Breeland, he hurt his knee this past week against San Francisco. He's up in the air for Monday night. What could that mean? Well, we could see rookie third-round pick Fabian Moreau, rookie defensive back out of UCLA, in the starting lineup. And for that reason, he's going to be the subject this week in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so Fabian Moreau, 6'5", 206 pounds, former high school running back, went to UCLA, converted to corner, and became a four-year starter in the secondary there for the Bruins. Had an injury his red shirt junior year, or might have been his true senior year. 2015, he missed a lot of time. It was a little bit slow coming back to 2016, but lined up at both cornerback spots throughout his career. I actually watched him for 3 years there at UCLA. He's tall. He's well-built. He's got some good length. He's physical at the line of scrimmage and press coverage. He tries to maul wide receivers if he gets locked on early in the down. He tries to win with strength and physicality. And while he can get beat off the ball due to a lack of technical refinement, he's got the physical traits to be very, very good in press coverage at the line of scrimmage. And then going back at the numbers, one of the top athletic testers at the cornerback position in Indianapolis, regardless of size. Even though, he's a big kid, and it's not just he tested well for a big corner. He tested extremely well across the board for the cornerback position. He understands leverage in the run game. He's a good run defender. He sets a hard edge, and he will come up and make a tackle on the outside, does a good job of getting off blocks, and he's reliable as a tackler, looks to get the ball on the ground, has a knack for creating turnovers in the run game, and he was also a really good blitzer off the edge as well. Now, I was really blown away by his combine numbers because from a negative side, I didn't see a guy that was that kind of athlete on tape. I didn't think he played to 4.35. I didn't think he was an explosive kid in the open field. To me, I thought he labored a little bit and changed direction. I thought it was just more from an instinctive standpoint. He got undercut a little bit more than I would have liked in man coverage. He didn't display, to me, great instincts at the top of the route. And I just saw a guy that was also a little bit late to react to balls thrown in his direction. For a guy with his size and speed, he was out of phase. And that, what do I mean by out of phase? Mainly in a trail position on vertical routes. For a guy that with his physical tools, I'd have expected him to be more in the hip pocket of a receiver on a more consistent basis. I just didn't see that. And to me, that was a combination of technique and then also instincts and overall just awareness of the position. And that was a question for me. Finding the football down the field was another. And so when you're talking about a guy that, you know, the technique may not be there, the instincts, the ball skills, I had some questions. He was a little bit grabby. He was called for one penalty. I thought it could have been a little bit more last year as a senior. But overall, this kid is toolsy, man. I mean, he's really flashed this summer and then also this fall. He was really physical at the line of scrimmage, like I mentioned. And when you have those tools, you have that speed, at least from a time standpoint, I had questions about his ball skills and whether or not he can take coaching. I thought that if he could take coaching, this kid's got a ceiling of a high-end starter. And I wrote that down in the spring, was he's got extremely high upside, but can he reach that upside? To me, he had a floor as a fourth corner and great special teamer, whereas just where he is right now, it's a matter of how much better is he going to get. He's got the tools to be outstanding, and this will be a great opportunity for him if he is thrust into the starting lineup in nickel or in base for this Washington football team on Monday night. It'll be a big opportunity for the rookie corner, but again, very, very toolsy. It's a matter of consistency and making sure that he's in the right place at the right time. So thanks again to Greg Cosell and everybody out there for listening here for another edition of the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week after a huge, hopefully, Eagles win. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.